ओम्यान्तिमस्य ध्यानविनाशनाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोविष्टं स्थापितं भूतले स्वयं रूपाकरामयं ददाति स्वापदान्तिकाम् पञ्चकल्पद्रव्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभ्यैव च प्रतीतानां प्रापणेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो. So today is Lord Ramachandra's appearance day. So there is one very nice verse about Lord Ramachandra that Lord Chaitanya speaks in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I thought we could read this verse today. Verses on the board. Please repeat after me. This is Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 22, Text 34. सकृदेवा प्रपन्नो सर्वास्मि च याचते अभयं सर्वदा तस्मै नाम्येतद्व्रतं नमः. सकृदेवा प्रपन्नो नमास्मीति च याचते अभयं सर्वदा तस्मै नाम्येतद्विव्रतं मम. सकृदेव प्रपन्नो नमास्मीति च याचते अभयं सर्वदा तस्मै नाम्येतद्व्रतं मम. It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, My dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Please repeat, it is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, My dear Lord, from this day I am yours, and praise to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on. Perfect. This is a quotation from the Ramayana. So this beautiful verse, this was spoken by Lord Ramachandra. And this was spoken by Lord Ramachandra at a very opportune moment. To whom was this verse spoken? To Ravana's brother, Vibhishan. Yes, to Vibhishan. So, guys, so when Lord Ramachandra with all the glorious army of monkeys that he had, and with his brother Lakshman, when they crossed the ocean and reached Lanka, then once they reached Lanka, they built a fort, they built a place where they would have their army and where they would all stay. So when they built their fort, then at that time, at the beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it describes it, that as soon as they get to Lanka, then they're attacking an island in some way. So it's quite difficult because around it you only have ocean. So when they get to Lanka, then all the monkey soldiers of Lord Ramachandra, they enter Lanka and they make a mess of the whole place. They get into all the beautiful houses and all these things and start breaking them. They go into the gardens and eat all the fruits. And they create a complete, they basically break down the whole city. And so Lanka looks like it's a broken forest or a broken town. And so then once they do that, then they come back and they make their place where they're going to camp, they make their camp. And once all of this happens, it happens so quickly, and these are such powerful rakshasas. But first, Lord Hanuman comes in, and we see that he burns down the whole of Lanka just by some fire on his tail. And then this happened the second time, and the entire Lanka is just destroyed. And within that time, Ravana is able to build the entire Lanka back to its old pristine state. So he was so opulent, he was such a powerful king, such a powerful materialist, is described, that he could, in a matter of a few weeks or something like that, he rebuilt the whole Lanka. So when they went back there, actually it's described, Hanuman was very confused. He thought, is this the same city that I came to? Because just a few weeks back, I burned the city down to the ground. And now we come back and the city's the same. Nothing seems to have happened to it. That was because in the meantime, Ravana had built the city back to its original state. And so then the monkey soldiers of Lord Ramachandra, when they come back, they destroy the city again. So when this happens, then Ravana's brother, Vibhishan, he goes to Ravana and he says that, I think the end of Lanka has come. In other words, I think this end time of Lanka has come because you have stolen a chaste wife. You have kidnapped the chaste wife. And so, for your welfare, I give you this advice, that Lord Ram has come here to Lanka, and you please return Sita to Lord Ram. So, naturally, it's said in the Bhagavatam that if you try to give a bad person good advice, then that person just becomes more angry. It has the opposite effect. So that was the effect that it had on Ravana. That when he was given this advice, then he became extremely furious at his brother Vibhishan. And he started to see him as his very own enemy. Because this person actually is my enemy. So he threw Vibhishan out of Lanka. He said, he chased him out of his kingdom. He said, you go away. So then, when Vibhishan is kicked out, then he thinks, oh, this is very nice actually. This is, I can use this for my benefit. This is my good fortune that Ravana has kicked me out.
Because now I can go and I can surrender to Lord Ramachandra. So Vibhishan goes to the camp of Lord Ram's army, and there he surrenders unto Lord Ram. And he approaches the Lord with a few of his attendants. And even though Vibhishan is such a great soul, visibly, he's quite visibly a demon. And he has the features of a demon, because he's born in that family. So they can recognize that he's someone who's coming from Ravana's camp. So as soon as he comes, they're a little afraid of him, or they're cautious of him, that why has he come, what is he here for? So he says, I want to meet your Lord Ram. And when he meets Lord Ram, then he takes shelter of Lord Ramachandra, and he says that I am yours. I want to surrender myself unto you. So after Lord Ram hears these words, then as a very good, you could say, king or manager, he consults his ministers there. His ministers are Hanuman. It's a bunch of monkeys, actually, his minister. And so he consults them and says, what do you think what we should do? What should we do? Should we accept this person or not? So different people give different advice. Some people say, oh, we should be very cautious with the enemy. This is the enemy's trick. He's coming here to find out our secrets, to find out how strong our party is. And once he finds that out, then he'll escape and he'll go back to his king, Ravana, and tell him everything. Another person advised him that no, we should kill him, because if we kill him, then this will make Ravana even more afraid. Then you'll see our strength. Another one of his ministers advises that, oh, we should beat him and send him back. So this way, you know, we can't kill a messenger. It's against dharma. So we should not do that. But we should maybe do the same thing that they did to Hanuman. You know, they burned his tail, you know, after all. And so we can beat him and send him back to Ravana. So different people suggest these different things. And no one wants to trust him, because they think, after all, the losses are greater than the gains. If we accept this person and he turns out, he's just one person, but if he turns out to be an enemy, then we've lost everything. You know, he's a spy. But if we gain him, then what will we gain? Just one person. It's just one person additional in our army. So after they say this, after all the different ministers of Lord Ramachandra give him this advice, then Lord Ramachandra, he says these famous words that Lord Chaitanya here is quoting. He's saying, Sakradeva prapanno yas tanasmi cha yachate abhayam sarvada tasmai dadam yetan vratam mama. He says that this is my vratam, this is my vow, that no matter what motivation a person is coming to me with, no matter how much of an enemy this person is, but the fact that this person has come to me today and has said, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, I have surrendered unto you. The fact that he has said this to me, therefore abhayam sarvada tasmai, I will grant him fearlessness in all circumstances. I personally will be his protector. And so therefore, because this is my vow, he said, because this is my vow, I have taken this vow, and the kshatriya is always true to his word, is always true to his vow, therefore, I have no choice but to accept this person. Even if he's an enemy, even if he's a spy, even if his heart is full of malice, but still, I must accept this person. So, this is actually one of Lord Ramachandra's qualities, that unlike Lord Krishna, Lord Ramachandra has three very prominent qualities. What are these qualities? In this incarnation of the Lord, in every descent, the Lord displays some aspect of him. And so, in the form of Lord Ramachandra, in Krishna's appearance as Lord Ramachandra, he had three specific qualities. One was that, yes. So that's the first guy. He says he's Lord Ramachandra is a man of one woman. He says a man of one wife. In other words, at that time, it was very common for kshatriyas to accept more than one wife. It was especially if you're a king, then it was almost necessary for the future of the kingdom. But he was ekapati vrata. In other words, he is a person of one wife. So that's one of them. What's the second one? Yes.
Always truthful.
More than truthful. That's along the right lines, but it was more than truthful. Huh? Righteous king. So he is righteous, yes. Kept his promises, yes. He was a person of one word, meaning that once he made his vow, not only was he truthful to his vow, but he would make sure to keep it. He was, and this was Lord Ramachandra's specific quality, that he was a person of one word. In other words, he would keep his word always. So if he promised something, then surely that would be fulfilled. There's no doubt about it. So that's here. This is it shows the weight of this statement. And the third one? He followed Dharma, yes. He followed Dharma. There's another one. Yes, he is a person of one arrow, meaning that his arrow, once it was left from its bow, it always reached its destination. It never missed. It was impossible for him to miss his target. So you see that, like in Lord Krishna's incarnations, Lord Krishna didn't follow any of these three. Well, one thing, he had more than one wife. He had 16,108 wives. So in his original form of Krishna, he's not trying to show the ideal king or the ideal person. He's trying to show a Lila Purushottam. It said that he is the perfection of pleasure. He's trying to show that how can God enjoy? This is who God is. That you can't compete with me. I am the best enjoyer. This is how God enjoys. But Lord Ramachandra, he's described as Maryada Purushottam, meaning that he's showing I'm the most ideal person. So we can see God can be all these things simultaneously. In one form, he's the most ideal person. So it's not that he's lacking that. But that's in Lord Ramachandra. He's Maryada Purushottam. Krishna's Leela Purushottam. He took 16,108 wives. And then Krishna, when he killed the demons, then he would play around with them, right, many times. He wouldn't kill them right away. He would make them believe that they were quite strong. In fact, what to speak of showing his powerful prowess by killing them in one arrow. But he would sometimes even run away from the battlefield. Right? One of his names is Ranchor. When did he run away from the battlefield? Huh? In Jarasandha, yes, Jarasandha's case, 18 times he ran away from the battlefield because he thought, what's the use of fighting with this person? Let me just run away. And then he'll collect some more armies, and then I'll come and kill them. So he wasn't a person of one arrow, because he allowed himself to be defeated so many times, and especially by his devotees. But in the case of Lord Ramachandra, we see that when he killed Ravana, at least this is the way that Srimad Bhagavatam described it, he only used one arrow. In other words, he was on this chariot, and he didn't waste any time. He took one arrow, and his arrow finished Ravana completely. He struck his chest, and then after that, all 10 heads were vomiting blood. And then the demon, he fell to the ground. So he was of one arrow. And then Lord Krishna, his promises are not very dependable, right? He didn't try to keep his promises. Why? When did he not keep his promise? Yes. Yes, absolutely. So before the battle of Kurukshetra, there were two parties. One was the Kauravas, and the other were the Pandavas. And both of them were his blood relation. In other words, both of them were his relatives, and so he was related to them. So he didn't want to take sides. He said, no, I won't take sides. I'm going to be neutral in this. So he said, therefore, I will be Arjuna's charioteer. And the other party, they can have my army. But I myself, I will not pick up any weapons. So I give you this promise. He told both sides. He said that you have your choice. You can choose me or my army. But I personally, I won't lift any weapons. And so therefore, the Duryodhan didn't care much for Krishna. He thought, what's the use of Krishna? He's not going to fight for me, so I'll take his army. And therefore Arjuna asked for Krishna, and Krishna became Arjuna's chariot driver. So this was a vow that he made, and for a Kshatriya it would have been a big mistake to break his vow. But we find in the time of the Mahabharata, when Arjuna was in difficulty, when Bhishma was about to try to annihilate Arjuna, Bhishma had vowed to Duryodhan that tomorrow either the Pandavas will die, either they will be dead, or Krishna will have to break his vow. So in order to protect his devotee, in order to protect Arjuna, he broke his own vow. And he ran to the battlefield. He ran towards Bhishma Dev, and he picked up the wheel of Arjuna's chariot, and he was about to throw it on Bhishma Dev. And so when Lord Bhishmadev sees that, they say, oh, this is truly wonderful. He says, this is truly wonderful. So therefore, then he drops his bow. And then he says, therefore, now I won't fight. Now you broke your vow. Now I won't fight. So Krishna, he didn't keep his vow either. His vow, and Lord Krishna knew that later on he would break his vow. And so therefore, Krishna makes a similar statement like this that Lord Ramachandra is making here. But in the Bhagavad Gita, but then what does he say? What does he tell Arjuna? Kshiptam bhavati dharmatma shashvat chantim nigacchati kaunteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashyati. That, O Arjuna, you declare it boldly. He says the same thing, but he doesn't say it himself. He says, Arjuna, you declare it boldly that my devotee will never perish. Because he knew that later on I will break my vow. So people may question that is Krishna's vow, is this vow so dependable? So better Arjuna, he never broke his vow. He never broke his vow. So better he states it. If he says it, then surely people will believe it. But Lord Ramachandra is not like that. You see, Lord Ramachandra, he always kept every single one of his promises. And therefore, he himself here, he could say, he says himself, he says that my vow is that to one who seriously surrenders unto me, saying, my dear Lord, from this day I am yours, I will give him courage from that time on. He will be safe from that time on. So this is Lord Ramachandra's promise for us. This is you could say affection, his partiality toward his devotees. That if the devotee, for his own, is described that the lion is very ferocious, and in annihilating the demons like Ravana, Lord Ram was very ferocious. But to his own cubs, if you've ever seen lion cubs, they're actually very sweet. Lion, everyone stays away from the lion cubs. But to his own lion cubs, the lion is very kind. He's very protective. So in the same way, to his own devotees, the Lord is very protective, and he does not. He always takes care of them. He always provides them protection, and keeps them safe in all circumstances. So then we may ask that what type of protection is the Lord giving us? Right? What type of protection is Lord Ramachandra offering here? Because in Lord Ramachandra's pastimes we see that many of his devotees passed away. Many of his devotees died in the battlefield of in the Ramayana. So this protection that the Lord provides is a courage, like he's saying here. This is the words that he uses, that he prays for me for courage. I shall immediately award courage to that person. And he shall always remain safe from that time on. So this is a spiritual protection that the Lord promises. That the Lord will protect that devotee's soul, give that devotee spiritual protection. And I was thinking a very wonderful example of this is in the example of Jatayu. That how Jatayu, he was just a bird, right? For those of us who know this story of the Ramayana, he was the king of birds, a very powerful bird. And when Sita was kidnapped by Ravana, then Ravana took him on his airplane, and took Sita Devi on this airplane and flew to Lanka over the sea. And while Ravana was taking Sita, then naturally Sita was crying out, and she was shouting, "Ram, Ram, help me," like this. So at that time, because he was in the air and he was flying through like this, many people heard the cry of Sita. Actually, even the Sugriva and Hanuman and the other monkey soldiers, they heard Lord Ramachandra. And so Sita's call. They heard Sita's call. But none of them could help Ravana. None of them could help Sita. I'm forgetting my train of thought. So, but Jatayu, because he was a bird, he could help Sita Devi. So then he flew, and he knew he was just a bird. And this Ravana, he was the king of Rakshasas. He was the most powerful demon at that time. He knew very well that Ravana was far more powerful than him. But in any case, he tried to fight Lord Ravana to protect Sita Devi. When he did this, then actually Ravana killed him. Ravana killed this bird, and this bird fell to the ground. He didn't kill the bird. He cut his wings and deeply wounded him. So Jatayu fell to the ground. And when he fell to the ground, then he started at the time of his death calling out Lord Ram's name. So then Lord Ramachandra, he comes to the site. He comes to where Jatayu is, and he sees his devotee like this, his devotee who essentially sacrificed his life for the service of the Lord, for the service of Lord Ramachandra, for his own service. And so then in Jatayu sees the Lord at the time of his death. He sees him face to face, and Lord Ramachandra picks him up from the ground. He picks him up, and Jatayu passes away. He passes away in Lord Ram's arms, in his own arms. And then after that is described, the Srimad Bhagavatam, even though it's such a summary, it's such a small, you could say, summary of the Ramayana, but it describes this, the Bhagavatam picks the parts that are specifically related to the devotees of the Lord. Because where there's an exchange between the Lord and the devotee, those points the Bhagavatam highlights. So, and that section is described then, that Lord Ramachandra, after that, he performs the funeral ceremony of Jatayu. Right? He performs the funeral ceremony for this bird. And so this is the sort of the lesson in the Ramayana and altogether. And this verse about surrender, that surrendering ourselves to the Lord, then the Lord takes care of us. That if we surrender our bodies and our minds and our senses and everything in the service of the Lord, then it's described just like the associates of Lord Ramachandra. Then the Lord gives that person full courage. In other words, that surrender is never unnoticed by the Lord. The Lord is never ungrateful for any service that the devotee does for the Lord. And through that surrender, that devotee is able to attain the Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, he often gave the same analogy. The reason why the Ramayana and Lord Ramachandra is actually so relevant to us. He gave oftentimes, he said that we are also like a army of monkeys, he said, that and we are trying to assist him in his mission, in this, you could say, battle, this war against Maya, this battle against Maya. So if we give ourselves in the service of the Lord, then it's described that all the monkey soldiers, even though, let's say, some of them were very powerful, but some of them were just monkeys. They were not so powerful. They were not able to fight so powerfully. Even though they were just monkeys, all of them who fought for Lord Ramachandra, at the end of their life, they attained the abode of the Lord. Saket is described. All of them, the whole army, whoever fought for the Lord, attained that planet of the Lord. So in the same way, if we also participate in Srila Prabhupada's army and for spreading this movement, for preaching this movement, then even though our attempts may be very limited, but the Lord here promises His protection. He promises that at the end He will deliver us. And throughout this life as well, that's a very important one. And throughout, at every step, the devotee of the Lord feels that protection from the Lord. Okay, thank you very much. I'll stop here. Shri Ramachandra ki. So, should we directly go into the next part, or should we take a comment or question? We should move. We need one question or comment. Okay. One comment, question. Yes. What connection did he do this? I was wondering about this myself. Let's just see this here. It's in the chapter, The Process of Devotional Service. And he, let's see. I cannot remember who he spoke this to. Maybe someone can. But the verse before this, Lord Chaitanya is making this point. He's saying, is actually very beautiful. The verse before this says, one is immediately freed from the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely says, my dear Lord Krishna, although I've forgotten you for so many long years in the material world, today I am surrendering unto you. I am your sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your service. So Lord Chaitanya this is a part of this whole point that he's making about the devotee surrendering himself to the Lord. And then this famous verse, Krishna Surya Sama Maya Andhakar, Jahan Krishna Tai Nai Maya Andhakar, is also, he says, Krishna is compared to sunshine and Maya is compared to darkness. Wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. As soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, the darkness of illusion, the influence of the external energy, will immediately vanish. So this whole section is on surrender and taking shelter of the Lord. So in that context, Lord Chaitanya speaks this. Yes, thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Now we have the next part of the program. And Madhavendra Puri will take over.
I'm continuing from last week. Prabhu Ray gave a talk on austerity. First, I'd like to beg the blessings of all the Vaishnavas present so I can actually say something useful in your lives. When Maharaj asked me to give this class last week, I actually started laughing, and he was a little bit confused because the class is on the austerity of body, mind, words, and I said I'm lazy. I'm on the mental platform, and you all know I speak a lot. So I'm probably the last person who should give this class, but I did it anyway because he asked. So the concept of austerity comes from the very start of creation. Gopur, I think, mentioned this very shortly in his class. When Brahma is born from the lotus, he's pretty confused what to do, and he goes searching around. He goes into the Garbha ocean, and he goes into the stem of the lotus flower, and he's not sure what to do. Everything's dark, and he's kind of lonely, although he has four heads. And these words come, tapa, these two syllables. And this is mentioned in the second canto, for those who want to look it up. And he meditates on these syllables. This is obviously means austerity. And from there he learns what he needs to start the creation. And the purport to this verse, Srila Prabhupada mentions that every human being is meant simply for this tapa and for no other business, because by penance only can one realize his self. And self-realization, not sense gratification, is the business of human life. So this is actually the business of human life, this austerity. And he also mentions in the same purport that it's the beauty and the wealth of the Brahmanas and the renounced order. So Srila Prabhupada, he wanted our society to be that of Brahmanas. So this is applicable to all of us in our life, this austerity. And then, of course, I'll just mention shortly the concept of sannyas, because it does also mention it there. When Lord Chaitanya took sannyas, he took it in the Mayavada order. So he was given Eka Danda, he was given one danda. But the tree dandi that we use in our sampradaya, it actually stands for this body, mind, and words. And so it's applicable very much to the renounce order. And we're not, obviously, all not in the dress of sannyasis here, but this is also applicable for ourselves, because Srila Prabhupada mentions that this sannyas initiation is a formal thing, but actually these principles can be applied in our life. But I don't know if everyone knows, although we call it a tree dandi, it actually has four sticks. And Swami Gopalhari mentioned last week, he said, body, mind, and soul, which is actually what the other stick is. It's the jiva danda. As far as I remember, I'm probably wrong, this is kind of emphasizes that we are individuals, because in the Eka Danda you have like everyone's one, because we're all Brahman. And but in our philosophy it's a little bit dualist. We're not exactly one, so we're a soul. And this concept is mentioned in the Madhya Lila, but Srila Prabhupada only seems to mention it once that I could find in a lecture, in a sannyas lecture in New York in 1971. He says, one stick is representing the jiva soul, another stick is representing body, another stick is mind, another stick, speech. So the jiva engages himself with his body, mind, and words for preaching work. So this is, as far as I know, what he derived from this concept. Also, I forgot to mention the pastime in Madhya Lila, also in the fifth chapter, where Lord Nityananda actually breaks this one stick of Lord Chaitanya into three, and he throws it in the river. I don't know if that's applicable here, but it was kind of amusing. Maharaj, he gave us a few verses to look up in regards to this topic. And they're from the Bhagavad Gita. There's four consecutive verses, and there's two other verses I wanted to mention, and actually they just happened to be the next two verses, so I was lucky in that. So I'm basically just going to go through the six verses one after the other. The first verse is austerity of body. So austerity of the body consists in worship of the Supreme Lord, the Brahmanas, the spiritual master, and superiors like father and mother, and in cleanliness, simplicity, celibacy, and non-violence. So just a small note, for the Supreme Lord, actually the word was deva, so it could also mean worshipping the demigods, but Srila Prabhupada chose to, although it can translate to just God, but Srila Prabhupada chose to just emphasize that in that aspect. And if anyone would question this translation, then you could refer to other sections of the Bhagavad Gita where Krishna then says something about demigod worship being inferior to actual worship of the Supreme Lord. So Srila Prabhupada, in consistence with that, he translates it like this. And then also the word pragya comes up, the worshipful personalities, which is in the translation, Prabhupada translates that to superiors like father and mother, for those who have any issues with their parents. It's an austerity of the body to listen to them. And also he mentions in the purport, another person who's a worshipful personality is someone conversant with Vedic knowledge. So that's your teachers in the Bhaktivedanta College. You're going to listen to Gopal Hari. mentions cleanliness, shaucham. This means internal and external. So obviously external means you have to have a shower. And internal, Prabhupada often mentions, is chanting the Maha Mantra. This cleanses the inside. And the Brahmacharya is the celibacy. This doesn't just mean people who wear orange. It means people who follow the regulative principles of household life as well. So that's the austerity of the body, in case you thought it was something else. I don't know if Krishna would have mentioned Bhagavatam class and sitting down and getting up early and chanting a japa or Mangalati, but you can consider that if you want. The next verse is on speech. Austerity of speech consists in speaking words that are truthful, pleasing, beneficial, and not agitating to others, and also in regularly reciting Vedic literature. Often, devotees, when we're preaching, we like to speak truthful and beneficial words for everyone, forgetting the pleasing and the not agitating. So that's one to remember if you feel like it. The Prabhupada mentions in the purport that the teacher, he has to speak the truth to the student, but and sometimes the truth is a bit hard to swallow, but he still emphasizes that we have to speak it pleasingly. You can't just yell at them and chastise them and get on their case for nothing. And in that purport, he also emphasizes studying the Vedas. So there's a limited stock of Vedic literature, and one should study this, because reciting the Vedic literature is also austerity of speech, quoting your verses and all that. Some speakers, they quote a lot of verses. I only know the Bhakti Shastri verses, so I don't really quote too many. Austerity of mind. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Ki. You mentioned satisfaction last week, Rupa Hari, didn't you? So the first one is satisfaction. And satisfaction, simplicity, gravity, self-control, and purification of one's existence are the austerities of the mind. So it's actually, as Gopal Hari was saying, you actually have to practice being satisfied. Because even the richest people in the world, they're miserable. And they have everything, but they're not practicing the sense of satisfaction. And sometimes the poorest people, they're very satisfied. So it's something that actually has to be practiced. You can't just expect that the next material thing will give you this satisfaction. You actually have to have satisfaction from within. Atmarama, self-satisfied, this is the term. And gravity, mona. Mona normally means silence. But in this case, Srila Prabhupada translates it as gravity. Gravity is it's a tricky word for some. Prithu Prabhu was described as grave. He would not reveal, you could not tell what was within his mind from these externals. Hopefully people utilize that in the right way. Shri Radha Gopinath Ki. Verse we find parallels with the Bhagavatam verse I quoted at the start, in the purport at least. Srila Prabhupada has something to say about sense gratification again. To make the mind austere is to detach it from sense gratification. It should be so trained that it can be always thinking of doing good for others, The best training for the mind is gravity in thought. One should not deviate from Krishna consciousness and must always avoid sense gratification. So it's interesting, Srila Prabhupada actually says, in this, Prabhupada says, thinking of doing good to others, this is how we can avoid overindulging in sense gratification, because sense gratification is a selfish thing. And if we think of pleasing others, obviously that doesn't mean helping them with their sense gratification. We understand from our teachings that this means helping them get free from material bondage and misery. And this will help us detach ourselves from our own sense gratification. If we what is it? The word? There's a quote. Idle mind is the devil's workshop. This one. I think, is it biblical? when you're not busy thinking of doing good for others, and you're just going to think of doing good for yourself in terms of sense gratification. Srila Prabhupada also says something else here. The best course is to divert the mind to Vedic literature, which is full of satisfying stories, as in the Puranas and the Mahabharata. So also, if you're having difficulty controlling your mind, you can pick up some of Srila Prabhupada's books. We have a few on the shelf here. And you can read them. And not only will that keep your mind occupied, but then it will also give you, of course, more tools to control your mind and learn other things and how to help people, of course. Srila Prabhupada mentions, is silence in this? No, he doesn't. So silence is in the purport, although it's not in the translation that I can see, which must be monam. Silence means that one is always thinking of self-realization. So it doesn't mean that you're on mute, it just means that you're internally thinking of your relationship with Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada also mentions in this purport that we should be straightforward in our dealings. I know that it's like our movement was created in the counterculture, so we kind of sometimes like to be a little tricky in ISKCON. But I've noticed that projects that are, and people who deal straightforwardly, it's a lot more effective, and the outside community appreciates it a lot more. And since more projects have been going in this manner, we're getting a lot more public relations, and everything's very nice. So honesty is one of the qualities of the Brahmana, so this is kind of hinting towards that, being transparent in our dealings and not being too... Srila Prabhupada was very, especially with the finances, he liked everything to be very transparent. If something was not accounted for, then he would be very displeased. And finally, this is the last verse that Yadananda Swami suggested. It doesn't have a purport, but this is where it culminates. This threefold austerity performed with transcendental faith by men not expecting material benefits but engaged only for the sake of the Supreme is called austerity in goodness. So doing our austerity with Shraddha, with faith, is the purpose here, and doing it for Krishna. So all these, there's no purport for this verse because he's already mentioned all these austerities before, and doing them in goodness, doing them in a detached mood is the ultimate goal. When I was thinking of austerity, the reason why I wanted to find some other verses is because sometimes in terms of doing austerity for Krishna, we neglect ourselves, or we kind of, I don't know, push the bar too far. And that's why the next verse is kind of nice, because penance performed out of pride and for the sake of gaining respect, honor and worship is said to be in the mode of passion. It is neither stable nor permanent. So the word for worship is puja, which is what we do for the deities. So if you're expecting puja for yourself, this is in the mode of passion. And obviously doing, people, we have sports stars and all these movie stars, and everyone does these kind of, a lot of endeavor simply for their own name and fame. And this is obviously in the mode of passion. And symptomatic of the mode of passion, it obviously dwindles, like sports stars, they get injured and then they wreck themselves, and that's it. They got 10 seconds of fame, and then they're crippled for the rest of their life. And it's also mentioned, it's chalam. We use this word in terms of the mind. It's flickering. It's not actually a permanent thing. It will never last. So austerities in the mind of passion should be avoided because they're not going to have any lasting result. And our goal is to have permanent results. That's why we engage in Krishna consciousness. It's not that we're against being happy or enjoyment. It's just that we don't want things that will indefinitely end and then cause misery. We want things that will last eternally and always be there, always be countable. Things in the mode of passion, they appear to be there and they may be more extreme in terms of sense gratification, but then they're gone. And also someone, a good example of someone doing austerity in the mode of passion is Duryodhana. Because when Yudhishthira took the kingdom from Duryodhana, actually the kingdom was very well kept. Another example is Jarasandha. The kingdoms, and even Ravana, who we were just speaking of, these kingdoms were very opulent and very well kept, and the citizens were pleased and happy in terms of material happiness. But the motivation was not to please Krishna, and it was not to help them free themselves from material entanglement. And this is austerity in the mode of passion. The demons are generally considered in the mode of passion. So Duryodhana, although materially speaking everything seemed okay, realistically he wasn't helping anyone get back to Krishna. And ultimately Yudhishthira had to take charge and Ram had to defeat Ravana and Krishna had to send in Bhima to kill Jarasandha because these people were not doing spiritual justice. And they were giving temporary pleasure for the people, but it was simply for a name and fame. Penance performed out of foolishness with self-torture or to destroy or injure others is said to be in the mode of ignorance. I'm not going to comment on fasting in this verse. You guys can figure that one out yourself. The example that comes to mind here is Hiranyakashipu. He was very, very determined and he inflicted a lot of pain on his body, standing on one foot and sitting in an ant hill and doing all these things. And also, there's this Vrikasura who was offering flesh into the fire to please Shiva, and Shiva wasn't coming, so then he decided to offer his head, and then finally Shiva came. This kind of austerity is in the mode of ignorance. Obviously there is some difficulty, physical difficulty sometimes in austerity. It's not that, you know, austerity in the mode of goodness is just really easy going and you just don't do anything. But just too much of this self-torture and especially the destructive attitude mentioned here to destroy or injure others, to over-endeavor to kind of snuff someone else out is not exactly the most spiritual decision you can make, as mentioned in this verse. So ultimately, the austerity of body, mind, and words has to be done in the mode of goodness, has to be detached, has to be for a higher purpose, not for name and fame, and it has to be pleasing for other people. We can engage all our senses like Ambarish Maharaj did in the service of the devotees and of Krishna. And that way we can utilize this tool in bringing us closer to Krishna and helping others come closer to Krishna as it's meant for. Any questions, comments, corrections, criticisms? I knew you'd say that. I think that's just because we're lazy. If you eat the 9 o'clock Mahaprasadam and you stay up till 12 and then you kind of dwindle around in your room and then you get up at 4 in the morning, it is torture. But if you go to bed at the right time and motor goodness is regulated, so if you regulate your body, then Mangaladi is not so hard. In Vedic times, you see that they're always rising before sunrise. Krishna did it, and all the kings were doing it. Dhritarashtra and all these guys are doing, they do their morning puja, like we do our japa, and then even while they're in battle, and then they'll go and fight. So I think we're just a little kind of irregulated symptoms of our motive, passion, and delicious Mahaprasadam. Is that right? Janet, to go?
I like your point. But it illustrated that the austerities can be done also with the proper motivation. This is very important for us that we follow austerities that we do that are for the spiritual one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And so, I mean, it's also good to note that at least in the conditioned state, that we're always going to have mixed motivations, but it's always good to check yourself. What is your motivation? Because a lot of the time we think we're doing things for Krishna, but ultimately sometimes we just want to look like a good devotee because we know that's like prestigious and we kind of can go up in the ISKCON hierarchy like this. So it's always important to check yourself because sometimes we think we're self-surrendered souls, but actually we're just after some reputation. Anyone else? Okay, I'm done. What's happening next in the program? Je ne sais pas. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki.